This is DomesticPreparedness.com. Since 1998, Domestic Preparedness has been a source of solutions for the professional preparedness community. Your host today is the managing editor, John Morton.
Domestic Preparedness is with Richard Burgon, the second vice president at the Association of Public Safety Communications Officials, APCO. He is the APCO board's liaison to the TERT Initiative Group here in Washington, D.C. TERT is the Telecommunicator Emergency Response Task Force, and Dick is also the Director of Technology Services for Douglas County, Nevada. In that role, he's participated in several statewide activities, including as past president and founding member of the Nevada chapter of NENA, the National Emergency Number Association, and the Nevada chapter of APCO. In 1999, he was appointed to the State Emergency Response Commission and has been co-chair since 2001. He also served as co-chair for the WMD Homeland Security Steering Committee from 1999 through the fall of 2003. We're going to talk today about the TERT initiative and several others that are on APCO's finely tuned radar. Dick, I want to thank you very much for taking the time on your busy schedule to talk with us.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk about some of these key issues.
Well, let's start first with the National Joint TERT Initiative. It came about in the aftermath of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, given their impact on public safety communications centers. In particular, these and other disasters showed up the challenge of maintaining adequate staffing levels at the centers. And so to address that problem and expand on some individual state initiatives in place, APCO and NENA teamed to develop the initiative. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the initiative and what each of the associations brought to the table?
Sure. As you said, a lot of this came out of Katrina and Rita. The whole idea of public safety dispatchers helping each other really started in Florida many years ago, where because of the number of hurricanes they've had, there was a need to help out other dispatch centers. This hadn't become a nationwide program. It was pretty local. These other hurricanes hit, and we found that even though there were a lot of police officers going in to help police officers, firemen helping firemen, paramedics helping paramedics, there was nobody going into these regions to help the public safety telecommunicators and their comm centers and to help them get relief, take on the extra calls. So Ron Bono with NENA, along with some other folks, had gone to the International Association of Emergency Managers and talked to them about taking this process that they had used in Florida and North Carolina, a couple other places, and developing a nationwide program. NENA then invited us to the table because of some of our expertise within the comm center. And for the last little over a year now, we have been trying to develop what we call the National Joint TERT Initiative to have a certified program nationwide to where we have teams available to deploy to other parts of the country to assist other public safety answering points and dispatch centers.
Now, you provide assistance to states to develop mobilization teams that you just discussed for the communications. Now, how many states are on board, and what's the process? Is it through EMACs?
Right. Currently, we've got about 11 states that are in the process of trying to develop TERT teams, but this whole program is still in the developmental stages. We haven't yet set all the criteria or received all the approvals from Homeland Security and FEMA, but we're aggressively working to develop a lot of those key strategies needed for developing teams within state. The whole intent is to kind of look at how the USAR teams are developed. That we don't expect every state to have a team, but those states that have enough depth and experience within their state can put together a team. There will be some national protocols and some guidelines on how to put that team together, training requirements. They will then put together their teams, train them, exercise them, and they'll then be available to be deployed nationwide to national disasters to assist other public safety communications agencies.
Now, the national protocols, where are we there with the development of those?
A good way to put it is we're getting close. I was in New Orleans last week with the TERT task force, and they were going through some of the finalized sections of some of the criteria that's going to be needed to be on the team. They were going through forms, making sure they complied with the National Incident Command System. They've got a meeting this week, or I shouldn't say the whole team, but a couple members with the head of FEMA to discuss this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're probably about 80 to 85% there of having this whole program documented so it can be presented and get stamp of approval, and we then take it out and teach it. The mm-hmm. other thing I'd like to point out is this is not going to be a product owned by NENA and APCO, even though we jointly own the trademark. The intent of this program is that other organizations, private, third-party companies that do public safety mm-hmm. training can take this and teach it, and there will be no royalty fees for actually teaching the course.
Mm-hmm.
We feel this is so important that we want anybody who's willing to teach it, as long as they're certified to teach it, can go out and teach it.
Yeah, well, that's great. Now, in terms of some of your assistance and training, I know that some states are extending their training efforts beyond public safety answering points to assistance to PSAP so as to enable deployment into command post communications at the scene of disasters in the field. Can you talk a little bit about that or those two areas?
Yeah, there's really two things going on there. One is, again, the TERT initiative, which talks about, which the whole intent of the TERT initiative is to go in and help people in a public safety communication center. But the other thing that can happen in a disaster or major incident is you could have a mobile command post, or what we are now referring to as incident dispatching. And so there will be some products coming down the road, and there's some organizations already teaching that particular topic of how do you support an incident remotely from a mobile command post that is specific to an incident, mm-hmm. as opposed to TERT, where we're looking at going into a public safety answering point slash communication center and relieving those people and trying to give them a break so that they can go out, work with their families, move out of the disaster area, and give them some relief so that they can deal with the disaster that they become a victim of also.
Now, the TERT initiative recommends that communication centers be prepared for interoperable systems as well as for loss of power, security, and personnel. I guess there are things like issues of security for generators and whatnot. What approaches have come out of training and exercises here?
Sure. One of the other things that has become very apparent is what they call continuity of operation. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with the equipment in front of you? How do you deal with the security of the communication center? Part of what we're discussing in this is that an agency has to look at those things to be ready to accept a TERT team. Mm-hmm. In other words, it makes no sense to deploy a team to an area where the comm center is not functioning if you don't mm-hmm. have the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
We want agencies to think about where would they evacuate to, how would they maintain continuity of operation, will their generators still work, how do you deal with the physical security? How do you make sure the people being deployed and even the dispatchers are still safe and secure
mm-hmm.
and their families? So that's just another piece of the puzzle to make this whole thing mm-hmm. work.
Well, another thing that you're looking at is focusing communication centers on training and planning for system restoration, multi-agency response, and evacuation. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, there's for many years, NENA and APCO both have done courses and documentation on how to maintain continuity of operation. But it has been one of those things that it really hasn't taken hold, shall we say, because we've never seen the type of disaster that Katrina has done on such a large scale
mm-hmm.
to where so many facilities had failed because they didn't have enough gas in the generator or they weren't operated on a regular basis. You know, one of the historical things that happens to communication centers is a lot of times they're built in basements. Well, when you have flooding waters, the first place the water is going to go is to that basement.
Mm-hmm.
And we've even seen that in Nevada, to where we had a comm center in northern Nevada that was built in a basement next to a river, and during a flood, it started filling up with water.
Mm-hmm.
So there just needs to be an entirely different thought process that security isn't necessarily best in the basement, because you're not just securing it from bad people who might want in, you have to secure it from natural disasters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, again, that's just part of the process of trying to teach people to think out of the box and do a little bit of a paradigm shift.
Let's look at some of the partnerships that you've formed up to implement this initiative. The TERT initiative is working with a number of government agencies and allied associations for implementation and providing assistance. Tell us what you're doing with the Office of the NIMS, the National Incident Management System, for federal credentialing of telecommunicators deployed through a TERT?
Sure. One of the key things with this whole program is that when you ask for a team because you need assistance, you need to know that team is qualified to do the job. That people have just haven't come out of the woodwork and said, hey, I'm a telecommunicator, I can do the job. There needs to be some sort of credentialing. They do this in other agencies. They do it in wildland scenarios, fire departments, law enforcement agencies. So we're working with them to establish a minimum training criteria for people who are on the team that will be a national certification, mm-hmm. or I shouldn't say certification, it's more of a national credentialing, mm-hmm. to where they will recognize certain skill sets as being a credential to be able, mm-hmm. to go into a communication center, such as things of, are you a fire dispatcher as opposed to law enforcement, or are, mm-hmm. you trained in both? Mm-hmm. Are you trained in the ability to do emergency medical dispatching, which can be key to an area that if you can't get ambulances out, maybe you would have to help somebody through rendering first aid. Mm-hmm. And that's what these EMD programs do nationally. So, again, it's creating a process to where you can make a request of certain skill sets of those telecommunicators, and you'll receive that the people who are certified in those skills.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also have an effort going with the National Emergency Managers Association, NEMA, to establish typing of TERT resources for inclusion in the EMACs, right?
Right, mm-hmm. because, one of the other things that happens is you've got to know what you're asking for, and you've got to know what the request is when you get it, and you need some common terms. So if you ask for a Type 1 task force or a type 1 team as opposed to type 3, mm-hmm. there need to be definitions to it. And that's part of what the task force has been working on is what is that definition? What does that look like? So that emergency managers, whether it's through NEMA or IAM, mm-hmm. They can look at a document, read a definition, know what it is they're asking for, and know what they're going to get when they make that request. Mm-hmm.
So how far along actually are you there with the resource typing and definitions? Are you pretty close?
Yeah, I think we're about 95%. Mm-hmm. Again, the meeting last week, that was part of the discussion, and they were just getting down to some of the finite details, mm-hmm. of that whole process.
Now, do you have a provision for state TERT coordinators to standardize the process and procedures that are related to TERT, including the FEMA-required paperwork for reimbursement?
Absolutely. One of the things that happens in disasters and one of my many tasks in life is I'm also an emergency manager, is that you have to have a standardized way to make requests. You have to have a standardized way to document when teams come, and you've got to understand the legal obligations. Mm-hmm. EMAC, which is the Emergency Management Compact, has done that across the country, and part of what TERT has to do is fit into that process and have standardized ways of making requests, mm-hmm. to ensure that, again, not only you get what you ask for, but there's a way to pay for it, there's a way to get reimbursed for it, and to document it that meets all the federal, mm-hmm. FEMA standards. When the disaster's over, somebody's got to do the paperwork. Yeah. The only way to get the paperwork done right is to have these standards.
So, therefore, with the resource typing and definitions and then the paperwork for reimbursement and all the rest of it, you've got presumably procedures in place for automated after-action reports or to facilitate that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, that's been part of the discussion is what additional reports do you need? And there'll be a little bit of requirement in there to do one or two additional reports in what Beyond FEMA asks is the National TERT Initiative is going to be asking for feedback that they do an after-action report, because we see this as a living process, that, mm-hmm. we've got to continually look at it throughout the years so that we can change the process to meet the needs of the emergency managers, FEMA, the states, and the comm centers. And this being such a new venture, without that feedback, we wouldn't have any way of knowing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, how are you providing information as to the operational deployment of the TERT programs?
Currently, we've got our own website. We've, mm-hmm. got it's njti-tert.org, which stands for the National Joint TERT Initiative-tert.org. And we've put some preliminary information up there. We've got some preliminary checklists. APCO and NENA will both be providing considerable amount of information to our members over time. We'll be doing training courses. We have hopes that the National Emergency Management Academy that FEMA runs will also potentially teach these courses. So we've looked at a lot of outreach ways to provide information.
Yeah, that's down in Anniston, right?
There's one in Addison. They also work out of Emmitsburg.
So oh, right. A couple of different places. The Fire Academy.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess along with that, I understand you're taking the leadership role in assisting the government agencies in the development of the TERT-style programs at the regional, state, and local levels. That's correct, right?
Absolutely. We, between NENA and APCO, we represent pretty much all the public safety telecommunicators in the country. We've probably, between the two of us, got about 24,000-25,000 members. And that reaches into most just about every large agency in the country. So we've got our ability to get the word out. We've got a lot of members, and so we're going to use that strength of the two organizations to make this a successful venture.
Well, let's look at the training programs a little more deeply that you have in TERT for the establishment of the selected trained teams. Tell us a little bit more about what's involved there as far as the training up of the teams, and I guess that relates to the question of the 11 states that you've got that have the teams that are in development. Can you go a little bit into what's involved in the training?
Yeah, this will be an end-to-end training that you've got to start with a state coordinator, and currently we've only got a few people that have offered to be state coordinators. But that's a requirement to have a team in that somebody's got to understand how to call up the resource, how to put the team together, how to provide support and coordination to them. So those folks will need to be trained. They'll need to be a training for supervisors and managers that will be able to go out with the teams and act as the team supervisor, which is really a different skill set than the state coordinator. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the skill set of the actual telecommunicators, like I've talked about before, which ones are police, fire, EMD. So there's a whole lot of training from end to end that goes everywhere from that state coordinator all the way down to the telecommunicators themselves and the jobs they'll be doing. One of the things that first responders will sometimes forget is they want to go help somebody else, but they don't understand that maybe they're going to sleep on the floor of a gym, or maybe they'll be sleeping in a tent, and somebody's got to explain that to them so they're ready to deal with it. Mm-hmm. It's not that they wouldn't. They just, that wasn't part of what they had considered when they volunteered to help. They just wanted to help. So that training has got to be totally encompassing from the people, again, doing the paperwork at the top to the people doing the job.
Let's turn to talk a little bit about mutual aid agreements. Representing the public safety communicators, I'd be interested in your view on the nuances for the public safety communications mutual aid agreements amongst the three categories, the interstate, intrastate, that is county to county, and municipal. There's differences. The templates are the same somewhat, but can you walk us through a little bit of that?
Yeah, this has been an ongoing problem in public safety since the beginning of time. Local agencies deal with interagency assistance entirely differently than when you get to a federal level. Sometimes two neighboring jurisdictions, their mutual aid agreement was a handshake over a cup of coffee. The problem with that is there's no discussion about how to do reimbursement, who calls who, what happens if those people aren't available. Then when you look at the other end of the spectrum, the federal government has got a very strict process on resource ordering because they've got to figure out how to pay the bill for the disaster. Part of what has to happen is those people with those handshake agreements need to understand that you can't do that in this day and age because these incidents get so complex. So there has to be a more defined process at a local level between neighboring jurisdictions, at a local level within states. So if you're traveling from one state to another, and then how does that transition to a federal incident to when you're crossing state lines? Every one of those things not only affects that mutual aid agreement, it affects laws. There's federal laws that govern mutual aid assistance. There's state laws. When you do, there are questions to be answered. that when you go into another state, is your state liability protecting you
mm-hmm.
from your home state, or is the state that you're working in?
Mm-hmm.
And the National Emergency Managers Association, NEMA, actually has a committee of attorneys to help work through a lot of those issues because of the differences in states. Mm-hmm. So it tends to be a very complex process that somebody's got to iron out, and they've done a very good job to this point of making it through a lot of those issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, all of your template agreements have language that addresses distribution of personnel and materials, staffing of an EOC, and staffing of a public safety answering point or dispatch point. Now, that goes back to the core of the challenge that came out of Katrina and Rita. Can you elaborate a little bit on how you're addressing that?
Sure. Again, being new within public safety telecommunications, sometimes people don't know how to ask for what they need. They don't know how to define what they need.
Mm.
So part of the process is to put in place documents and information that will help them through that thought process and identifying what their need is. Because the last thing, again, you don't want too many people there and you don't want too few.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the documentation is to help people work through that process, knowing that they're asking for the right resource and that the people who will actually be ordering the resources at a county or state level know what that request is.
So in a sense, it's establishing predictability in the process of asking and responding.
You bet.
Yeah. Let's move to a number of other topics related to public safety communications. The National Capital Region, which includes the District of Columbia, as we know, and 18 other jurisdictions in Virginia and Maryland, will be the first in the nation to establish a public safety regional wireless network at 700 megahertz, according to a release recently. So this will provide, as I understand, a seamless, interoperable, redundant wireless broadband network of networks with the capacity to transmit video, data, and voice communications. Representing the public safety communicators, what can you tell about this effort as a model for other regions?
Sure. 700 is a new band for public safety. It was just released. Many states are still coming up with regional plans on how to use it. What they're dealing with in the D.C. area is the ability to use that across many jurisdictions, and they have taken that 700 spectrum and used it for mutual aid. There's spectrum in there for broadband and for what we would typically consider voice radio,
mm-hmm.
and they will be one of the, if not the first, one of the first to use it in the broader scheme of not just voice radio, but for data, taking that video, converting it to data. It's a very aggressive plan. It's what the intent of that spectrum was for. And it'll be almost a pilot project because mm-hmm. nobody's done this before. So I'm sure they're going to have some hurdles to get through.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got a great opportunity to solve a whole lot of interoperability problems with clean, relatively clean spectrum, with what IT people would call triple play,
mm-hmm.
the ability to do voice, data, and video.
Mm-hmm.
And send real-time information back to incident command post and decision makers to help coordinate those things. So it's a great project they've got here with some pretty clean spectrum, so they have some wonderful opportunities in front mm-hmm. of them.
Well, that brings to mind another effort for a nationwide public safety network, things like Siren Call and Frontline. What's your view on those efforts?
Sure. Currently, APCO's view has been fundamentally one of some very unique ideas. We haven't endorsed any particular idea at this point because they're still on the drawing board. They've been proposed to the FCC. But both programs are looking at a way to take parts of this new 700 spectrum and creating a nationwide interoperability network to where you could literally be from Washington, D.C., and if you're in Seattle, still be able to use your push-to-talk radio and talk to your folks in your jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that would help a lot within national disasters. Right now, when you go from one disaster to another, your radios may or may not work.
Mm-hmm.
The proposals on the board deal with everything from not auctioning off that spectrum and using a trust to oversee it and help work through the issues of creating a nationwide network. Other proposals are to auction part of it to help fund part of that network. So I believe there's some great opportunities in front of public safety to be able to solve a lot of interoperability problems, but there's a whole lot of issues still to be vetted out in those proposals. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of naysayers out there that believe you can't do a nationwide network. Mm-hmm. And there are people who feel like they must control their own radio network. There's been a lot of discussion that historically public safety radio networks don't go down. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're built to a high reliability for disasters, and there's been a lot of skepticism. Can the private sector build that type of reliability? But if you look at Katrina, there were private networks that kept running that were mm-hmm. built to that. When you look at some of the new technology people are using, some of the efficiencies with the ability to provide power, there's clearly an opportunity for the private sector to help out public safety with a nationwide network. But there's just a whole lot of hurdles, and it's just refreshing to see people put ideas on the table, willing to let people take shots at them, not so much as to be negative, but to vet out, mm-hmm. you know, how do you get from point A to point B? How can you make something like this happen? And so I commend a lot of these people who are putting these ideas on the table. To take that risk, to dare to go where nobody's gone before, and to have that debate. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we'll ever get there, but there are really some enthusiastic ideas, and it's a great discussion to be having at this time.
Yeah. From the user's perspective, I'm sure there's issues to do with protocols for circuit discipline and nomenclature and what have you across the
absolutely.
Fire.
One of the concerns is that when you're using a network owned by a private company, will you get the priority you need, or mm-hmm. will somebody talking about a traffic jam be using up those radio channels, voice channel, data channels that you may need? Mm-hmm. So that's one of the issues. Historically, cellular companies have been very hesitant to give public safety priority on their networks. Mm-hmm. And this has brought that discussion out, and they're starting to move on that thought process to where, okay, maybe public safety should be getting priority. But part of that whole issue is they need to know that there's some liability protection there for them, because there's always the chance that if they don't give a cell phone channel to one of their users who may be calling on a heart attack, mm-hmm. and somebody gets hurt as a result of that, them not getting the channels, would they be held liable? Mm-hmm. And I can understand that, and I completely appreciate their point of view, and I'm sure we can work through those issues over time. But everybody's got their concerns based on their history, and again, we got some opportunities in front of us, and I think we can work our way through those issues.
Mm-hmm. I have one last question, actually, from the perspective of state and local public communicators, public safety communicators. What's the reaction to the recent FBI requirements for firewalling and such?
Regrettably, there hasn't been a lot of reaction because a lot of people haven't thought about it. Those who do know about it are reacting with eyebrows high and paying attention with clearly the thought of, wow, you know, it's a pretty detailed requirement. Just as an example, within my own agency or within my own county, we have to put up firewalls between our communications center, our fire departments, I'm sorry, not our fire departments, but our police departments and our courts. And it costs a fair amount of money. It's labor-intensive. It creates a lot of complexities within the network. We end up with a lot of routing problems. And clearly there is a need to provide that level of security with the threat of terrorist attacks potentially impacting our networks. And people haven't given enough thought, and there needs to be more thought to it because it has to happen. It's going to make life a bit more complicated for our network folks. But people need to pay attention to that whole requirement coming out of the federal government for mm-hmm. those firewalls. It's needed. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some money and a lot of planning.
Well, Dick, I want to thank you. This has been most informative. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your service.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
This has been a Domestic Preparedness podcast interview. Thank you for listening.